It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 186 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan, and joining me as always are my co-hosts, Carson Ray.
Hey everyone, it's a great day to talk about X-Wing.
And John McDermid.
Hello everybody.
It's full-blown world hype right now. The World Championships is just about a week away, so this episode will post on Wednesday. The following Wednesday, we're going to see the start of the Last Chance Qualifier, which is the prelude to the main qualifying events for Worlds leading up to the finals of the World Championships on Saturday.
Yeah, should be a fun week. Excited to get back to Minnesota and play some X-Wing.
Yeah, we're excited for you to come visit. Should be a great week. Got some cool side events coming on. We've got the LCQ. And then it'll just be great to hang out with the broader X-Wing community for a couple days.
All right. Well, per Radio TCX tradition, we got to make some Worlds predictions. And I think, you know, usually we're pretty bad at this. So I think we'll keep up with the tradition.
Should be a fun episode. Let's get into it. So Worlds Week for me starts a little bit earlier than you guys. Well, actually, Carson, you're going to be playing in that Coruscant Invitational. So it starts for both of us that Wednesday. I'll be playing in the Last Chance Qualifier because I am a scrub who did not get an invite to Worlds. And you already got an invite, so you're going to be playing on Thursday for the main Worlds Qualifier, but you're also going to be in that Coruscant Invitational, right?
Right. So I'll at least be playing for 2 days, and then we'll see what happens after that.
And then, John, you've got the qualifying round for you, day 1B on Friday, right?
Yep, so I'll be playing Friday, and then I'll actually be there kind of helping out with the event on Thursday. So I'll be there both days.
Are you guys, at this point, are you anxious for Worlds? Are you excited? What's, like, the overwhelming emotion for you right now, knowing it's just, like, a week away?
I'm very excited to go to Worlds and be there. I haven't really thought too much about playing the actual X-Wing there. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, kind of in the same boat. I'm just excited to go and hang out and see what's going on. Definitely less pressure, I feel like, than other years. Like, I feel like for first edition Worlds, there was more pressure to do well. And it's not that I don't care necessarily. I just, you know, I'm going to go, and I'm going to play, and I'm going to have fun and see everybody. And that's good enough for me.
Yeah, I'm more excited just about the event in general than anything. I think it's super cool that we're going to have it at a new venue this year. So rather than the Fantasy Flight Game Center in Roseville, it's moving on over to the River Center in St. Paul. I think opening up that venue means that there's going to be a lot of people there, a lot more space to accommodate all the players who want to fly in from across the country and across the world. So I'm really excited that the, you know, Twin Cities area gets to host all these players from across the country, which I've met so many cool people through X-Wing. I think that's probably the most exciting part of it, is just being able to see all those people in one space for kind of the most, probably the most exciting event for X-Wing players for the year. A little bit nervous about LCQ because in order to get into the main qualifying event, not only do I have to play a bunch of rounds that Wednesday, if I then qualify, I might even have to play the following day for a very long 2 days of X-Wing. So that's already kind of wearing me down, but you know, I'm excited for the opportunity to play and thankful that there's a last chance qualifier.
I think you'll do fine. I'm not concerned.
Aw, thanks, Carson.
Uh-huh.
All right, we should talk, though, a little bit about our expectations for Worlds. So we've done a fair bit of Worlds coverage in a lot of the last, I don't know, 2 months' worth of episodes. So I thought we'd kind of consolidate that down and just go quickly into, I guess you could call it a top five list. I don't think these are in any particular order here, but kind of the five of the list archetypes that we expect to see at Worlds and something you should be watching out for if you're playing.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. We had a lot of extended tournaments, you know, this fall in August and early September. And then there hasn't really been much in the gap, you know, since Wave 5 was released. So there's a bit of a gap in information, and then we're going to have the biggest event of the year, Worlds. And so we have pretty good guesses of what we'll see, but who really knows, you know? There could be a whole new archetype brewing in Europe or something that shows up.
Yeah, and I was looking through List Fortress just trying to see if there's anything I'm not noticing, and it's been quite a while since we've had a lot of major tournaments, and we've seen, you know, a whole new wave release as well, and not a lot of opportunities to see how that's going to impact the metagame. So I think this world will be really interesting in that there's already a pretty diverse metagame going into it, lots of different viable list archetypes. But yeah, like you're saying, Carson, there's a lot that could just come out of nowhere for us relatively, or things that we're not expecting just because there haven't been enough premier events to really evaluate them.
I think that speaks a lot, though, to the health of the meta and the game, that there's a very diverse meta out there right now. And at least for me, in my experience, this is the first Worlds in, you know, a couple years that doesn't have like one or two defined meta lists that are really dominating in competitive play.
And even within a lot of the archetypes that we see, there's some variation amongst them so that you don't always see the same strategies being employed.
That being said, I do feel pretty confident about these five that we have here.
One we talked about very recently, last week's episode with Paul Olson, we were talking about Separatist Swarms. And since we dedicated a whole episode to that, we won't go too in-depth here. I'd recommend definitely listening to that episode. Paul's a great Swarm player, so he had some great tips for how to take down his list. Plus, if you beat Paul at Worlds, John has promised to buy you a beer. So, you know, keep that in mind so you're really ready to take Paul down.
Paul's like an okay Swarm player, but I will hold up on my promise to buy people beer that are of legal age.
Thank you for guaranteeing that. That's really good for legal purposes.
But, you know, apart from Paul, I think, you know, the Separatist Swarm does have a lot to offer, and there's, I think, going to be a lot of people playing it.
Yeah, and I think this is something, if you haven't played a lot of Separatist Swarms, which I think in the United States, there's kind of a smaller concentration of them. We see a lot of them doing really well across the world. This is a list type you definitely want to be prepared for. In particular, if you're playing any kind of Ace, I really feel like you need to watch out for those Captain Seer Swarms. Much like what Paul is running here, a lot of people are a little cautious around grappling struts and all those kind of weird mechanics that the Separatists brought into the game. But I think the Seer Swarm is the actual real threat because, you know, Captain Seer's ability, while a friendly ship at range 0 to 3 performs a primary attack, if the defender is in its bullseye firing arc before the neutralize result step, the friendly ship may spend a calculate token to cancel one evade result.
Yeah, Seer's really strong, you know, pushes damage through on those key expensive targets. But Separatists don't just have that, you know, they also have the Nantex, which is kind of the unknown factor in the Separatist Swarm right now. You know, we have a lot of information. We know Seer's good. The Nantex, particularly with Ensnare, you know, passing those tractor tokens out, can also be a pretty devastating thing for Aces as well.
Well, and we know the mechanics of the Nantex, particularly Sunfac with Ensnare, are really bad for small base Ace ships. One of the biggest challenges, though, is that it's also quite a big point sink for the Separatists, and I don't think we know quite if the balance is there, like if that's too much of a liability to have in a list to put that many points into one ship for your Separatist Swarms, which otherwise kind of thrive on having lots of ships and having their points spread out pretty thin across all of them.
I think you'll see both. I think you'll definitely see the Nantex ones and the Seer ones.
There's also the Dooku version 2 with the Sith Infiltrator with a smaller swarm that's out there.
Yeah, so I mean, they have a pretty good pool of assets here. I think some kind of Separatist Swarm will do pretty well and will be well represented in the, you know, final bracket on Saturday. So this is something you should definitely expect. And I think for a big part of what I think makes them valuable is they give any kind of aces, whether it's an all ace list or it's just a list that's got, you know, one little closer ace, gives them a lot of trouble because these are effects that are really hard to avoid.
But that's not the only swarm you have to deal with. The Republic's also bringing a pretty good one with Sinker in the Arc 170, along with a bunch of Torrents and then something else.
Yeah, I think that's the big flex slot there too. I mean, Sinker's obviously designed to be used in a swarm list like this. Ships in Sinker side arcs at range 1 to 2. Get a reroll on offense, which when you add a bunch of smaller ships there, suddenly those rerolls add up and give you a lot of value. And the typical Sinker list we'll see are things like Sinker, 4 Torrents, and then maybe Rico Lee, maybe another Arc. We've got those new Y-Wings in play, so those could be a factor.
Yeah, I think, you know, especially with the Republic Y-Wing coming out, that really does open up that flex slot a little bit more. I think Broadside is a great addition there. I've seen some people experimenting with some CLT Jedis in there. The Republic has a lot of good choices around the 40 to 50 point range. And so there's a lot they can really fit in here.
And you can really tailor it to your play style too, because each of those options, they're just different enough where, you know, you can fly a little bit differently and do some different things with the list.
Well, and they're also just a very meaty build, too. All those ships tend to have a lot of hit points, especially when you're comparing them to, like, the Separatist swarms. Each of the Torrents has 5 hit points. Sinker's got 9 hit points. You can get, you know, Rico Lee in there with just an R2 for regen, which is, you know, functionally 7 hit points. So they just, you know, in volume, take a long time to tear apart. And that, you know, I've found as I'm experimenting more and more with different lists that just having a large number of chassis on the board can compensate for a lot of early disadvantages you experience in a game. Like, you know, if your Torrents all take a bunch of damage, but you still have them on the board, they can still block, they can still shoot, they can still help dig you out.
Right. This one doesn't quite have the firepower that the Separatist Swarm has, but it has dramatically stronger staying power. It's just really hard to score points against the Sinker Swarm.
Definitely something you want to watch out for.
Another popular chassis we've seen coming out of a lot of competitive formats in the last couple months are the Inquisitors for the Imperial faction in that TIE Advanced V1. We've seen a couple different versions of it, and we saw Matthew Carey do very well with it at Gen Con with the Inquisitors with the fire control system and concussion missile upgrades.
Yeah, and I think his list is still a very strong one. Grand Inquisitor with fire control, concussion, and sense, and then two of the, you know, single force charge Inquisitors with just the fire control and concussion. Paired up with Jenden, I think the synergy between those four ships is still really strong, thanks to Jenden's pilot ability, having those charges to let you take target locks with your ships early in the game beyond range 3, lets you set up a really favorable initial engagement where the Inquisitors can use their concussion missiles, have decent modifications between force, target lock, and focus tokens, or if they take evades, they also have really reliable defense there between an evade, a force charge, and 3 agility dice.
Right, I think the Inquisitors really stood out as kind of the ideal mid-range ship. You know, it's got pretty good offense with those concussion missiles set up by Jenden, and then just a tremendous defense with the 3 agility, the force, and the evade. For, you know, a really minimal cost at 43 points. And then you're, you know, able to have, you know, some sort of ace end game piece. You know, we've seen Soontir Fel, Grand Inquisitor. I'm sure there's some other options. And we've seen the Inquisitors, you know, be used outside of the Jenden build. I think that's probably the strongest one, but definitely seen them with Decimators as well. These little guys, the TIE V1s, they're going to be all over the place, I think. And for good reason.
Yeah, I think they're really the kind of the breakthrough mid-range ship, especially going into Gen Con, where I felt like a lot of it was favoring either kind of straight-up efficiency with 4T70s or ARC-170s, or just going to the EA send, like the high ground list with all the Jedi or Imperial Aces. They really broke through and showed that mid-range has a really strong place in this game, and I think because of that, we'll start to see a lot of mid-range lists in multiple factions do well at this coming Worlds. And then we get down to Republic Aces. And Carson, I'd like to defer to you on this one because you did win the North American Championship with that high ground Republic Aces list. So where do you think the Republic Aces are sitting going into this world?
I think they're still in a good position. I don't think they're in quite as good of a position as they were at the beginning of this meta season. You know, the addition of more tractor effects is not great for those Jedi.
Yeah, they don't like Sunfac.
But, you know, regenerating shields is still incredibly powerful. You know, being able to, you know, get up above the half point threshold with regeneration. Really good. With the, Naboo Starfighter and the Delta 7B, you have, you know, the best regen platforms in the game. There's definitely a recipe for success there.
Yeah, regen is still best, I think, on Republic Aces. One of the big problems I foresee is the issues they have, not only with Sunfac, if that is a relevant force in the game, but even just with swarms in general. I think they do have a harder time against Sinker Swarms and Separatist Swarms. Over on the Separatist front, I really feel like that the chassis on these Republic Aces are really not meant to take a lot of shots in mass. You know, Anakin in the 7B still only has 2 agility dice, so he can handle, 2 to maybe 3 shots in a round all right, but when it gets down to, 6, 7, or 8 shots coming at him in a round, he's definitely going to take some damage, and that could mean he's gone in, maybe 2 turns of firing if he can't get out of there.
Well, Obi-Wan's a pretty good piece, though, against the swarms. You know, being able to have a full focus for multiple attacks, whether it's the attacks are being sent to Obi-Wan or somebody nearby, having that versatility does really help the Aces against the Swarm.
But even then, I still worry about, you know, Captain Sear's ability over on the Separatist side, giving that functional crack shot where, you know, you just have to line up a couple of those bullseyes and you're probably going to push through at least one damage, which does tend to matter because once Anakin loses two shields, you start to get a little worried about him, especially if he doesn't have time to regen.
Right. It's not their favorite matchup for sure, but Separatists are just one force here. You know, there's seven factions, and I think you're going to see a pretty healthy mix of all of them. So I think that does still make the Republic Aces a pretty strong choice.
And then kind of last in our top five pick here, and again, certainly not ranked in any specific order, but we do have the Imperial Aces kind of archetype that we've seen doing pretty well. One of the main variations of that, I think a lot of people have been flying that are using this archetype, is the Darth Vader, Suntorfell, and Duchess build.
Well, and I'm sure, John, you would rank this a lot higher because you have a decent amount of experience running Aces in this game, both in first edition and now in second. I really do like a lot of the chassis that the Imperials have. I think they have some of the most versatile platforms. They don't have regen, which gives them that disadvantage against Rebels, but they make up for that in a lot of other ways.
Well, and having multiple strong initiative six Aces is a pretty good trade-off, I think.
Definitely a list archetype that's going to value a bit a lot more than most other lists.
Yeah, and that's true for a couple reasons. You know, you've got Vader and Suntir there in Initiative 6, and Suntir's got that double repositioning ability that certainly can't be undervalued at Initiative 6, but also with Duchess, because she has the ability to skip the adaptive aileron step, or she can even do it while she's stressed. And, you know, if she's at Initiative 5 against other I-5s, moving last, that knowledge is super valuable with that additional repositioning that she can get.
It still gets me when she doesn't do the ailerons.
Every time. Well, it's kind of functionally not doing the ailerons is like getting another reposition action, right? Because normally that platform can't do that. I really do like flying Duchess. I was using Imperial Aces a couple months ago pretty actively, and Duchess was easily the most fun to fly. The build I was running at the time, which is probably a little too expensive now, had Duchess and Fifth Brother along with Predator and Afterburners. So with the Afterburners on there, you can do some silly stuff like use your ailerons, then do like a three bank, and then boost with Afterburners, and then barrel roll as your action. So you could end up in some pretty wonky places. And just like the range of ending locations were really hard for your opponent to predict if they're moving at a lower initiative.
Well, and I really like her ability too right now with the prevalence of gas clouds that are out there. Because she can just, you know, ailerons over a gas cloud and be like, ha, lol, no
don't
consequences
care.
Whatsoever. Yeah.
And I think, you know, Suntir over on the Imperial side is still probably the best value to point ratio you can get for an ace in the game. You do have to fly him well with just three hit points. He can fall apart pretty quickly if you just get one bad engagement. But, you know, there's a reason that we see a lot of top performing players run these Imperial Aces list and, you know, have Suntir as a staple. You know, even just with Predator on there, you're not paying a lot of points and you get so much value over the course of a game, especially if you make it into the late game and you still have Suntir up.
And even with his ability to double reposition, if he doesn't have the opportunity to do so, he can more than likely end up with double mods. You know, take the evade action, and then if he's got that bullseye lined up, get the free focus at the start of engagement, which is also really good.
Yeah, and then as long as you're minimizing the shots coming in, you have some pretty decent survivability. So lots of great choices there. Lots of different archetypes we're expecting to see at Worlds. And this isn't even a comprehensive list. There's a lot of other stuff we could have gone into, but we were just trying to highlight some of the top ones we think you'll most definitely see do pretty well at this Worlds. All right, so now we get to go into the fun stuff, kind of general predictions that we're going to have.
Right, we did the safe bets. So now we can get into the wild shots.
And I think we should start pretty broad on this one. Without getting too specific, we should look at what are some platforms in the game that we don't think are on people's radar right now? Things that we think will perform better than they're probably expected to by the public.
I think the first one that comes to mind for sure is the Fire Spray. I think the Scum faction's kind of hurting a little bit right now in competitive play, but the Fire Spray going down to the new medium base size, I think, has made that ship super, super good.
Well, and having the built-in boost, too, especially on Boba Fett, who cares about getting up and close with a lot of different ships, you know, that's super valuable because the medium base gives you a slightly longer boost, And, you know, when you're dealing with swarms, you can get Boba into really interesting positions, especially if you have the Slave 1 title equipped, where you can just respond to whatever they do. You set the two left turn, well, the Slave 1 title lets you switch it to the right turn if that makes more sense for you once your opponent's ships have moved.
Right. I think, you know, particularly when you're looking at the swarm matchups, I think the Fire Spray is probably one of the best tools against them. You know, Boba Fett's ability is amazing, you know, getting all those extra rerolls. You know, they have the reinforce action, which they don't do too often, but is a really good option when you need it. Plus, they have access to bombs. You know, just starting Emon off with the Boba Fett crew, you can just set up facing away from the Separatist swarm and just start launching bombs behind them just right off the bat. Don't give them time to set up.
Yeah, I was actually playing a Boba Fett and Emon build the other day, just two fire sprays, and actually gave me a pretty decent run for my money there. The game ended up pretty close at the end. I did lose, but man, it was mostly because I did not expect all the cool things you can do, especially bombs, which I haven't seen a lot of in other archetypes, just because they don't necessarily have, you know, ships that can take them.
Right. Right now, there's not too many good ships that can take bombs. You know, it's a great tool against the swarms. And so that's where I think the Fire Spray can really shine. You know, it's already pretty good. And then they have that option to take some pretty powerful tools against the swarms.
I don't know what you're talking about. The Quad Jumper is clearly the best platform for bombs.
Well, that's another thing I really do like. Speaking of Quad Jumpers, the medium base has a lot of resiliency to tractor effects, which we see are becoming a lot more prevalent in the game. And since they aren't so easily moved around by tractor tokens, this gives you some opportunities. Yes, it'll still lower your agility, but that's going to matter a whole lot less, though, when you have options to just arc dodge straight up. Another platform, though, that I think is not getting enough attention is over on the Imperial side. The TIE Defender is still, I think, a very relevant ship in the game right now. And I think it's got a lot of perks that some of the other Imperial ships don't have.
I think you're wrong. I think it's just bad.
Well, I mean, it's okay. So first off, it's got 7 hit points, 3 hull, 4 shields, and 3 agility dice still, and it can reliably get focus and evade on a given turn. That's a pretty good place to start, so that even if you end up taking a lot of shots, you still have a pretty good chance of either rolling out of them or having some modification there to get you out of the trouble.
It is. It's just that these guys come in at a pretty hefty cost, you know.
Sure.
Especially if you're trying to take like an ace TIE Defender, those kind of come in at the same price point as like Anakin.
Sure, but I mean, it's got 4 shields, a boost, a white K-turn, a free evade. Like, none of that is bad.
Yeah, and I mean, the 7
Anakin
hit points
can
isn't
have
really
a white K-turn.
White K-turns are huge, too.
He's got a lot more than 4 shields.
Well, I mean, a lot of people go to the higher initiative options, but even the initiative 4 Countess Riad, being able to turn, you know, pretty much any straight maneuver into a K-turn, that's super relevant because, you know, when you're dealing with large masses of ships like a Separatist swarm, you really need all that distance to get behind them, which will give you a huge advantage because they might get a little bunched up and not have such an easy time turning around.
I actually wonder which one's really harder to remove, a TIE Defender or a 7B. Ether Sprite with regen.
They're pretty tough, both of them.
Yeah. The white K-turn's really good, though.
I think another kind of more recent addition to the game that we might see appear at Worlds is the Republic Y-Wing. You know, it brings a turret platform to the Republic faction and also brings bombs to the Republic faction.
Oh, yeah. This one I'm a buyer on.
And also brings the thickest model.
Yeah, that model's great. Yeah, the Republic Y-Wing, I actually think is going to be pretty good. And it's one of those where, you know, we don't have that information. So, you know, we're not quite sure, you know, what the lists look like with Republic Y-Wing. But, you know, I really like Broadside.
Well, and they have a lot of durability, especially compared to the classic, like, Rebel Y-Wing or Scum Y-Wing, where they have 3 shields and 5 hull instead of 2 shields and 6 hull. Then they also have that built-in ship ability where if they're not critically damaged, you can convert a crit result down to a hit result when you're being attacked. So they are less susceptible to getting those nasty double damage crits or fuel leaks, which helps their survivability a lot. I think it's substantial enough that it's going to make a difference in a lot of X-Wing games. And they're also a great platform for Ion Cannon, which, you know, with all the small bases out in the metagame right now, I mean, that's going to be super relevant.
Yeah, that's why I really like him. I like that Ion Cannon on the Y-Wings a lot.
You know, drop a broadside into your list with an Ion Cannon turret, and that's something that your opponent can't ignore if they bring in any meaningful small base ships.
yeah, it's just another tool. You know, the Republic really has a strong base as far as all their ships are really good. And so then just adding another solid option just gives them even more tools, which is sweet.
All right, so let's get into some of those real worlds questions. First off, so the last several world X-Wing World Championships have been won by people not from the United States, which is a little hard for us USA folks to handle. What do you guys think are the odds that the USA is going to take the worlds this year?
Well, it's interesting because I think this is probably going to be the most international worlds has ever been, is my guess. You know, with the invite system, that's been really helpful for international players, you know, having the time to prepare for the trip, you know, instead of waiting for the lottery. So I think that's going to make it a lot easier for international players to make it out to this world, which is really exciting. That means, you know, even when it was hard for them, you know, they've still taken worlds the past 3 years. So, you know, will the U.S. be able to make a comeback and steal the title back? I sure hope so.
Yeah, but it is great. I'm really glad that all the international players had at least some more time to, you know, make those plans. If they got their invites, they could figure it out ahead of time so it didn't get exorbitantly expensive. So I am happy to host as many people from outside of the USA as possible. But, you know, at the same time, man, I do hope we get it. It's been three years, so we could really use this.
Yeah. Got to have a Minnesota champion.
Hopefully someday. It's got to be you, Carson. You're our only hope. All right, so let's get down to the big three questions, though. We have three actual predictions that we have to make for Worlds. All of them are going to pertain to ships and cards at the final table at Worlds. So we're going to make three predictions here. The first one is, what's a pilot that you expect to be at the World Championship final table? Carson, go.
I'm going to go with Fenrau.
Just in general?
Yeah, well, Scum's won Worlds, gosh, was it the past 3 years? I think they're going to go for four.
Okay. What about the Rebel Fenrau? They're still one of those, right?
Sure. I think if I guess Fenrau, I get both, right?
Okay.
I think that seems fair.
I don't think having the Rebel versions...
You're going to go with Oddball?
Get the most platforms covered.
I'll give you any Oddball.
I feel like Oddball should be a bonus to another pick.
Get that
John, what's your pick for pilot at the final table?
I'm going to go with the old reliable Soontir Phil. He is the ace of legend. I feel like Empire is just doing pretty hot right now. And he, like you said, he's just like such a good value for his points. So I think we'll see him up there.
Empire never wins Worlds. Don't bet on that.
They win everything else. I also picked a ship based on its value. I'm going a lot simpler. The Trade Federation drone. In the Vulture class droid fighter, I think that's going to be there. I think Separatist Swarms are poised to do very well at this Worlds. So I'm really expecting that when we get down to that final table, you know, after a rough day of a very large bracketed tournament, I think there will be at least one Separatist Swarm at that final table, and I think they'll be bringing a drone.
Just not Paul's.
Just probably not Paul's. Hopefully a lot of people have won beer at that point.
Jeez, I missed the episode and it must not have been very good. You guys just keep ragging on them.
All right, next up, though, let's just pick a ship chassis in general. Doesn't have to be the same one as the pilot you picked, but at the final table, what's one ship type that you're going to see?
Okay, I'm going to say Y-Wing.
Okay, Rick, again, picking the one that's Y-Wing? In multiple factions.
Exactly.
You have to specify.
No, I don't.
BTLB is different. You don't,
pick
nerd.
One. Come on.
BTLB, what's it going to be? Whatever the Scum one is. Wait, are the Scum and the Rebel ones the same?
Yeah.
Do they have the same marker? Okay. You have to pick one, Carson. Those are actually different chassis.
Those are different?
You can't just say, like, Millennium Falcon and assume it's all the... Or say YT-1300 and assume it's all the YT-1300.
They're all different. Pick one.
I'm going to pick one for you. It's going to be specific.
All right, I'm off Y-Wing. I'm going to go... This is dumb, but I'm going to go T-65.
T-65, okay.
X-Wing.
Classic X-Wing.
That's fair.
That would seem appropriate for what the game is. And actually, Rebels, you know, we didn't talk about them a lot in this episode or at all in this episode, really.
Bad.
They're bad, but they're the only thing the U.S. has ever won with, so.
Also playing the odds again. I get that. That's fair. John, what about you?
I'm going to go with the TIE Advanced V1. Like I said before, we've seen those Inquisitors do well. I think the chassis is just too good not to see it perform well. You know, if it's just generics or if it's the Grand Inquisitor, heck, I'm happy to see Seventh Sister appear if someone's brave enough to fly her all the way to the final table. But that's my guess.
Sticking with the Imperial theme, I get that. I'm going to go with the Royal Naboo N1 Starfighter. I would expect it'll be a Rico Lee flying it, but in my heart of hearts, I hope it's Little Annie with the double barrel roll. That would be the dream. If he wins Worlds, I think we'll have to make like a 5 straight that says this is pod racing.
Sounds good. I'm in.
Come on, man. You don't think it's going to be Dine? Obviously the best Royal Naboo Starfighter pilot.
I don't even know who that is. Anyway, okay, last prediction here. This one gets even more broad. Pick an upgrade card that will be at the final table.
Oh, it's got to be regen, that R2 Astromech.
Still strong, you think?
Oh, yeah. It's showing up in something. No idea what.
Maybe your T-65.
A T-65. Yeah, that could do it. You know.
You seem to be. You have a theme here of picking things that appear in multiple places across the game of X-Wing.
I'm trying to strategize here. Yeah,
just doubling down.
I hope he's wrong about all three. That would be pretty funny.
That would.
We get the picks with the more specific ones. John, what's your upgrade?
I'm going with Predator. It's been a pretty consistent upgrade. This one is across factions. You know, we've seen it on Rick, seen it on Soontir. I kind of picked it because of the Imperial theme here, but. You know, it's a cheap upgrade. It's a good upgrade. So I think we'll see it.
And my go-to is also, I mean, upgrades, obviously, a lot of them are cross-faction anyway. I'm going with Sense. I think there's a lot of great Force-using platforms that are viable. I think, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi or Anakin are both great platforms for Sense, especially if you're not able to get as huge a bid. I also think we're seeing a lot more, like, Grand Inquisitors or just Inquisitors using Sense to help compensate for either lower initiative or lack of a bid. So I think there's a pretty strong chance that we'll see someone at the final table running that card.
Yeah, that's probably right.
Ezra Bridger.
I think I'm going to hit the Yahtzee, though, and get Rebel Fenrau, a T-65, and R2 Astromech all in the same list.
All in the same list.
That list sounds pretty bad, but let's hope someone can do it.
Carson, if a Radio TCX listener wins Worlds with that list, what will you do for them? What's the prize?
I'll resign. That's what they get.
John resigns. You heard it here first. You get John's place on the podcast.
I don't know. I'd have to think of something pretty cool. That'd be awesome.
All right. Something cool, and also John will quit.
How about
my 2 weeks?
They would get to pick an event I play Rebels at. That seems pretty good.
All right. That seems like a low prize. I feel like you should at least like.
But I never play Rebels.
Also.
That's I don't know true. Why I'm betting
That'd be
on them.
Pretty extreme for you. All right, guys. Hopefully we're going to be getting another episode in, probably a short one the week of Worlds. We're going to be pretty busy the days leading up to it, but hopefully we're going to get some content out for you. Expect a lot right post-Worlds. We're hoping to do some live streaming too, so if all things go according to plan, stay tuned to our Twitch page, twitch.tv/RadioTCX. Anything else you guys want to say before we get into the week of Worlds here?
If you're at Worlds, come and say hi. Love to hear from you.
If you're at Worlds and you beat Paul, come and say hi also. You get a crisp high five along with John's beer.
That's right. Well, it won't be my beer. It'll be their beer. It's just my money paying for it. But good luck to everyone out there, regardless of any bets or whatever that we have put. I hope everyone has a good time and does well.
I hope everyone does well. I hope everyone wins. That's what I really want.
Well, statistically, that's impossible. But that's a strong ambition there, Carson.
Never tell me the odds.
I was just trying to be positive and nice.
That's my job.
Oh, I miss Minnesota.
You've become so cynical. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and like our Facebook page. We are on our way to 1,000 likes, and we're getting pretty close, so I'd like to push that number a little bit higher. So if you haven't liked us on Facebook, it only takes a second, and we'd really appreciate it.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
If you like listening to the show, you can go on iTunes and leave us a 5-star review saying what you liked and why you think other people should listen.
And if you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/RadioTCX and becoming a supporter of the show today. It means so much to us.
Again, folks, thank you so much for listening. Hopefully we'll see a lot of you at Worlds. Otherwise, we will talk to you next time on the podcast. Goodbye. It's a trap.
Carson's a Colorado player now, though.
Yeah, John's just sitting there really sad because he said he has no chance.
Meanwhile, the least valuable member of TCX sitting here crying by myself.
Paul isn't here.
Oh, man. There's also the Duco version 2. Sorry. There's also the Duco version 2. Duco. There's also the Dooku version 2 with the Sith Infiltrator with a smaller...